In our second case this morning, 2023-0352, in the matter of Stuhl versus Samara Health System, on behalf of the appellant. Mr. Funk, good morning.
Good morning, Your Honor. May it please the court, Stephen Funk of the law firm of Retzel & Andrews on behalf of Summa Health System and the other Summa parties. I'd like to reserve 3 minutes of my time for rebuttal. This case presents a very important issue relating to Ohio's peer review statute and whether it protects residency files that are kept and maintained by hospitals for the purpose of evaluating and reviewing the quality of care, the competence and professional conduct of resident physicians. And as set forth in our brief, the purpose of the peer review statute adopted by the General Assembly is to protect and ensure that healthcare entities have the freedom to meaningfully review and critique and thereby improve the quality of healthcare provided within their institutions. And that statutory privilege applies particularly important for resident physicians who are authorized to practice medicine under the supervision of licensed physicians. And that's why, you know, in addition to the arguments in our brief, we also have amicus briefs from the American Medical Association, the Ohio Hospital Association, Ohio State Medical Association, the Ohio Osteopathic Association, because they all understand that it is critically important
so
to protect.
So one of the, one of the other side's arguments is essentially that you have structured the residency program, or SUMA structured the residency program so that anything doing that deals with a resident is under the purview of what you have defined as a peer review committee. Is that correct?
No, that's not correct.
Are there documents that are discoverable about residents?
Yes.
What kind of documents would those be?
So let me explain. There's really essentially two categories of documents that would potentially be subject to the peer review privilege. So, for example, let me first answer your question, then I'll get to the two categories. So there's always the opportunity for any patient, their own individual medical records are always going to be subject to discovery. So whatever health care provided to that for that patient is going to be subject to discovery.
By that patient. Okay,
that's
but,
right.
But what documents could they ask for about residents? Or have you protected everything that deals with anyone in your residency program?
Well, that goes to my second part of the answer, which is the two categories. So for example, if you ask for specific medical records that are unrelated to asking for the residency file, which is the peer review file, then there might be a question there as to whether or not that record was generated exclusively for peer review privileges under the first category of documents. But what the original source rule makes very clear is that what you can't do is just say, I would like to have the peer review file. I would like
to have the residency file. I guess the concern, though, is that you have made everything part of the peer review file.
Well, no, that's not the way it works, Your Honor.
Have you or have you not?
Have not.
Okay, so what specific documents could they ask for about a residence?
Well, again,
could they ask for their application, or is that part of your peer review file?
Well, again, we have, for example, there are personnel files that are not part of the peer review file. A personnel file, if you ask for, like, their application, that would be potentially part of the peer review file. That's really the key difference here is that...
So their application would be part of the... review file.
No. The application would be part of the personnel file.
So if they had asked for the personnel file instead of the resident file, they would.
That would be a totally different case. That's right, Your Honor. I mean,
How do they know how you've defined these?
Well, it goes to the difference between what you're asking for. So, for example, if you're asking for specific medical records, and I'm talking about patient records, that is a different situation where you have to determine whether or not it's covered by the peer review privilege from what they did here, which is they asked for the residency file, which is the peer review file kept as a record of the peer review committee. And that's what the original source rule says.
Is there an index that was given so that people can see exactly what is in the residence file without knowing the document, what type of documents?
Under the statute, it says all records of a peer review committee, and it says the word all, the plain language.
I understand, but I also don't think under the statute that you can just say that, that the peer review committee runs the hospital, and so every every document in the hospital is a peer-reviewed document.
Well, that's not what we're talking about here. So the peer-reviewed file is what they asked for, right? So they asked for the residency file, knowing that that's the file that's kept and maintained by a peer-review committee for purposes of performing the review of internal review of peer-review or resident physicians. So all we have to establish under the second category of documents is that that is, in fact, a record of a peer-review committee. And our affidavits are very clear and specific in establishing, first, that there are peer-review committees, and two, that this is a record of a peer-review committee.
But I guess that's where I'm kind of having trouble with, because I read the affidavit, and it makes it sound as if you have this what you define as a peer-review committee. The peer-review committee runs the residency program. The staff at the hospital are agents of the peer-review committee, is what it says. And so it makes it sound like any employee that deals with the residence program is under the peer-review committee.
Yeah, so, Your Honor, it goes to really the nature of the request that the plaintiffs made in this case. So if they had asked for specific types of medical record, or like we'd like to see the certain kinds of records, patient records, that would be a different question. You would be able to obtain those records. But what they asked for here was, we would like the residency's entire file. The residency's entire file is a record kept and maintained by a peer review committee. And that is under the statute, that falls under the second category of documents. It says that if it is a record of a peer review committee, it is exempt, period. There are no exceptions.
So there's parts of that then that are not exempt, other than how you've characterized it as a record of the peer review. I mean, there's parts that they can obtain from the hospital generally.
So, right. But my point is that the 2003 amendment to the revised code to this peer review statute was very intentional in terms of saying you can ask for specific types of records, but what you can't do is ask for the peer review committee's file. And that's going to be exempt regardless of the source of the documents within the file. And that's, for example, there are cases that we cite to in which they say we'd like the physician's credentialing file. That is exempt. It doesn't matter what's in the file. That's exempt. That's a record of a peer review committee. So the nature of the request that they made here was a specific request for a residency file. A residency file is a specific type of record that's kept and maintained by a peer review committee for purposes of peer review, for purposes of reviewing the quality of care, professional conduct, and competence of residents and physicians, and that therefore is exempt.
Is there any reason that this just couldn't be sent back for the judge to do an in-camera review of these documents?
Well, that
could see what, because it's really it seems very vague from the affidavits to what's actually in this file.
So that goes back to the nature of the legal standard that's here. The General Assembly made this a bright-line rule. This is not like a privilege, a legal privilege, like attorney-client privilege, where you have to look at the substance of the document to determine whether or not it's privileged. What they said was, if it is a record of a peer review committee, you can ask for the original source documents, but you cannot just ask for the records of the peer review committee. And that's why, in this particular case, because the only thing they asked for was the entire residency file, because it is a record of a peer review committee, we were not required to identify each and every document within the file, because the entire file is exempt from discovery because it is a record of a peer review committee. So this is a unique, this case is one in which there's a clear bright line rule. The entire residency file is exempt. Now,
okay.
If you want to come back and ask
When I look at your definitions in your affidavit, you say, or what the affidavit says, that these are peer review committees. They're all peer review committees when they're acting as peer review committees, essentially.
No, I think the purpose of the affidavit was, their request was, we would like the entire residency file. The purpose of the affidavit is to set forth the two facts. There's only two facts that we have to establish. One, that there is a peer review committee. Even the Ninth District found that there was a peer review committee. And then second, is this a record of the peer review committee? Now here they said we would want the entire residency file. That is a record of a peer review committee. Those files are kept and maintained by the Graduate Medical Education Committee for purposes of reviewing the quality of care provided by residents.
Okay, so here's I pulled the language. So here's what you say. You said peer review committee is a committee of SUMA in relation to SUMA or its medical staff, either in its entirety or at such times as the committee is engaged in peer review activities. That seems to suggest that these committees aren't always peer review committees. By your own definition, you say at such time as they're engaging in peer review activities.
Well, Your Honor, I think if you read the affidavit as a whole, it's very clear that they're a peer review committee. The whole purpose of the committee is to review.
What does that mean, at such times as they are engaged in peer review activities?
Doesn't that
suggest that there's times when these committees are doing other things?
No, Your Honor. I mean, it's very clear that what they have is there's a graduate medical education committee that is the umbrella committee, and then under that there are individual clinical competency committees for each residency program. Those committees are the ones that directly review each of the residents within the quality of care and competence of each of the residents within their particular programs. But they're all under the umbrella of the graduate medical education committee. So they're just trying to make clear that there are peer review committees, graduate medical education committee, and clinical competency committees, and that this is a record of a peer review committee. You know, and that's why I say a remand would not be appropriate here, because the courts have held, you know, throughout this peer review process that in 2003, when they adopted the original source rule, they adopted the premise, the General Assembly, that you cannot just go directly to a peer review committee and ask for a copy of their file. That is a bright line rule.
So
you cannot do that.
Is there anything that stops a hospital from having a peer review committee ask the committee that runs the hospital?
No, Your Honor, because when it comes down to...
There's nothing that would prevent that. So you could essentially insulate everything in the hospital from discovery, as long as you said the peer review committee is in charge of care at this hospital, or in charge of hiring, firing.
So there's two different types of discovery requests that potentially could happen. One would be a request for specific patient records, and a second would be a request for a peer review file, right? So if you come in and ask for specific patient records, that would be the first category of documents in which you'd have to establish that those records were prepared exclusively for a peer review committee. Right? So on that question, it's going to be a more difficult analysis as to whether or not that specific record is, in fact, being used exclusively for peer review. But that's not what they did here. They specifically violated the original source rule by going directly to the peer review committee and asking for their file. We would like the residency file. In fact, they knew what the residency file was because they added the thing, including all the performance evaluations within the file. So they understood that this was a peer review committee that was established by the hospital for purposes of reviewing the quality of care of resident physicians. And that is exactly what the original source rule prohibits. So in this case, you don't have to worry about that, because all we have to establish is that there's a peer review committee, which even the Ninth District agreed there was a peer review committee, and that this is a record of the peer review committee.
But if the peer review committee didn't create it and didn't, and it wasn't created for the purposes of peer review, which would be reviewing the quality of the performance and the credentialing, and then also if there's an incident, looking at it in a more adjudicatory fashion. I mean, this was maintained by other people than the file was maintained by other people than the peer review committee. Is it fair to say we're just going to dump everything into a peer review committee file, even though other people use it, access it, create the documents, maintain it, and in all likelihood, not all those documents are reviewed or used by the peer review committee? How do we resolve that?
Well, Your Honor, the affidavit actually does resolve that. So, for example, what it says is that the residency coordinators gather and maintain the records, but that the records in access to the residency files is strictly limited only to those individuals who are engaged in residency review and peer review. Now, the Ninth District tried to parse that difference between residency and peer review as if it was somehow two different types of review, but they're functionally the same. The definition of review, peer review under the statute, is any quality review of the care of any individual who provides health care. And so residency review and peer review are functionally the same, because they are both involved in the quality review of resident physicians. So the residency file might be gathered in order to put all the materials there for the peer review committees to review and evaluate the health care provided by resident physicians.
And where in the statute do you feel confident that residency is included in peer review?
Well, it's very clear in the plain language of the statute. So the definition of peer review committee is very broadly written to include any quality, quality assessment committee, performance improvement committee, or any other committee that conducts professional credentialing or quality review activities involving the competence, professional conduct, or quality care provided by healthcare providers, including both individuals who provide healthcare and entities who provide healthcare. And so, in fact, residents then are unquestionably individuals who provide healthcare. In fact, the definition of physician is anyone authorized to provide healthcare services. And so the statutory definition is certainly broad enough to encompass residency physicians. And there's nothing, absolutely nothing in the statutory language that would suggest that resident physicians are somehow an exception. In fact, there's peer review statutes in 50 states across the country. Not a single court has ever suggested until the Ninth District that residents are not physicians that are not covered by the protections of the peer review statute.
But would this apply to nurse practitioners and physician's assistants as well?
If there was a peer review committee established for purposes of reviewing the quality of care regarding nurses or nurse practitioners, yes.
Thanks.
So the statutory language is very clear. It says individuals. It does not create exceptions based upon whether they're a resident or whether they're a licensed physician. And so peer review, in some respects, is a broader definition than just, you know, a peer. It's entitled to be anyone who provides healthcare services if it's subject to review by a peer review committee. So in order to establish an exception, and that's really what was so troubling about the Ninth District decision, is that they created this suggestion that residents are somehow not entitled to protections from the peer review statute. That would be carving out an exception to the statute that the General Assembly clearly did not intend. And it would be a judicially created exception that would put Ohio as being the first state in the entire country that would have suggested that residence physicians are not subject to the protections of the peer review statute. And if anything, resident physicians it's more critically important that resident physicians, the review of resident physicians, would be subject to protections under the statute. So I would ask the court to not accept that premise and to, you know, essentially to apply the language of the statute as written, which is broadly intended to cover any individual who provides peer review. So really what it comes down to, I think the statutory language protects resident physicians. It really comes down to what is the legal standard and did we meet that legal standard with their affidavits? And the legal standard is all records of a peer review committee, and that really goes to your question here. Because they asked for the entire residency file, all we had to establish is that it is a record of a peer review committee, and it clearly is. Now, the situation might be different if they asked for specific patient records, but that's not what they asked for here. They asked for the peer review, and the whole purpose of the 2003 amendment was to prevent that very practice of just going and saying, I want the peer review file, and then putting the burden on us to establish that somehow the records are privileged, when all we have to establish is that they are, in fact, a record of a peer review committee. Now, with respect to one other thing that they argue in terms of, they even sort of acknowledge that if they ask for the peer review file, that would be protected. And so what they try to do at that point is say, well, the residency file is not the peer review file. It's sort of suggesting that there might be two different types of files. But a residency file is the equivalent of what for a licensed physician.
So is a residency file just all the information the hospital has about a resident?
Could it?
Or is it? No, I'm asking what, I mean, that's, I think, one of the challenges here. It's not clear what a residency file is.
Okay, so the residency.
Help us understand, is that everything the hospital has about? Does that include everything the hospital has about a resident?
It has the information in it that ultimately is gathered for purposes of having the peer review committee review the quality of care provided by a resident physician.
So is there another file that sits out there that has other stuff, like
there's personnel files, there would be the individual records, patient records, and any hospital.
And they could have asked for all that, and you would have given it to them?
Individually, yes. It's, so long as it wasn't a record that was prepared exclusively for a peer review committee. So that would be under the first category of documents. But what the original source rule makes very clear is that they cannot just simply come to the peer review.
Did they ask for other documents, or they just asked for?
Yeah, there were a number of document requests that they made.
But
the only
one
that's a subject to the appeal was request number 25, which is where they asked for the entire residency file. And so, for example, if they had said, we'd like the entire peer committee review committee file, there'd be no question that that file would be privileged. So the only issue is the residency file a peer review committee file? And our affidavit was intended to show that it is, in fact, a file kept and maintained by a peer review committee, which is all we need to show under the plain language of the statute to establish that that this is protected. I see that I'm over my time, so I
just one more question. Is your paper file and new innovations file identical?
Yeah, I think the affidavit is very clear that the
file. No, she doesn't. It's not clear. It says it's maintained in two forms, the residency file, a paper file, and a new innovations file in an electronic database. Are those identical?
Yes.
Thank you.
Thank you.
Good morning, Ms. Oldham. How are you?
Good morning. I'm good. Thank you.
Chief Justice Kennedy, Your Honors, may it please the court. Megan France Oldham and Colin Wise on behalf of Kelvin Stahl Incompetent and his family, his mother, his father, his brother, his sister. With peer review committee privilege, the medical industry has provided more protections than any other industry. Think about pilots and airlines, architects, construction workers, drug manufacturers,
why is
clergy.
That, if that's what the legislature wants, why does that matter? Why is that our business?
With that understanding, Your Honor, we ask that the statute be strictly construed. Generally, if a tragedy occurs, there is a full and transparent investigation. Those injured find out why, what happened, an attempt to get accountability so that hopefully this does not happen to someone else. I think we can all agree that the truth matters, transparency matters, and that sunlight is the best disinfectant, as said by Justice Brandeis.
So my question is, peer review for residents does not involve credentialing and privileging, correct?
Correct.
So what's left then if we say there's peer review for residents?
Your Honor, so the statute 2305.252 clearly does not include residency programs. ACGME, which accredits, oversees, deals with residents, that is totally separate than peer review. I disagree with a lot of what Attorney Funk said factually in terms of what's been addressed in this court, but it's very clear that a residency program does not fall under Ohio Revised Code in terms of peer review. He references what other states do. Well, we're only looking at Ohio's legislation. And we know that, as this court held in Wilson versus Durrani, the General Assembly says as much by the words that is not used as it does by the words that is chosen. And the plain meaning of 2305.25 does not include a residency program in the list of covered hospital operations in terms of peer review committee privilege. When you look at 2305, you know, why is this matter? Why is it important? They have carved out this protection. We ask that this court strictly construe what that protection is and also hold that under the specific facts of this case, referencing the affidavit of Dr. Lapley, that they have not met their burden, as the trial court ruled and as the Ninth District held. In denying the motion for reconsideration, the Ninth District held that it in this case, with the facts of this case, with the affidavit that they produced and that they relied on, that SUMA has not met its burden of establishing that the entire resident file fell within.
So instead of relying on this kind of vague affidavit and trying to figure out what it means, why not just have the judge do an in-camera review?
So SUMA, that's what they chose. So we filed our motion to compel.
Right. Okay. I understand. That's what they chose. But ultimately, we're going to make a decision. Why shouldn't we just send it back to the trial court judge and have them look at this file and see?
So SUMA's taken the position that the entire resident file is privileged.
Right, and you're taking the position it's not, so why not have a judge look at it in camera, figure out what's in it, see if this is really a peer review file, or if this is all these things you suggested might be.
So I don't know what's in the file. I haven't seen it. That's why we're here. I don't know if the judge would be able to look at a document and determine on its face if it's peer review or not. And I think that's what SUMA's position is, that the way that this file is constructed makes it peer review, and that the trial judge may not be able to look at a document and know that. Attorney Funk told you that that they have produced, that we requested, and that they produced a personnel file. That is not correct. We asked for the resident file, and they discussed residency.
Why not ask for these other things?
So I don't know what magical language to ask for. We asked the defendant, SUMA, for Dr. Alashi's resident file. And their response was not, well, here are some records and here that you do get. Here's his application. Here is his human resource file. They just said, objection, peer review, privilege. And here we are. There was no index that was provided to us. There was no privilege log that was provided to us. They just said, you do not get it, period.
Why would a trial court judge not be able to, in an in-camera inspection, look at that and say, this doesn't apply, this isn't solely for peer review purposes?
So my concern is that, obviously they haven't taken that position, but my concern is the judge would not know where it is stored and whether or not that constitutes peer review. It is very important to tell this court, this case was peer reviewed. Calvin Stahl's case was peer-reviewed by surgery and internal medicine in July or August of 2020, right after this happened. I'm sorry, July of 2018. So right after this happened, this case was peer-reviewed by general surgery and by internal medicine. That is not what is at issue in this case. We are not trying to get those records. That is what peer review is. It is a retrospective review of the care that Calvin was provided. We're not trying to get that. We're trying to get something totally separate. The resident, the first year intern resident that was allowed to re-intubate him,
right,
intubated him incorrectly, and now he's in a semi-vegetative state. We're trying to get his file. What should it include? It should include his application. It should include his testing results.
Right.
It should include whether or not he's even allowed to intubate at the time that he intubated Calvin.
So a judge performing an in-camera inspection will look at everything that's in the residency file, take out everything, the opinions of the peer review committee, exclude those that you say you concede you're not entitled to, and would be able to give you everything else that relates to the actual treatment that you allege was malpractice.
So I would suggest that if that is how the court's inclined to rule, that it make it specific that the peer review would be specific to what happened to Calvin, and that any other evaluation, the testing results, that those would not fall under peer review, and that those are documents that we'd be permitted to discover. The family has not only asserted negligence claims, but claims for negligent hiring, training, and retention. How do you prove that? You prove it through a resident file, whether or not he was properly trained on intubation, whether or not they knew or should have known that he couldn't properly intubate, and they still allowed him to intubate in an emergent situation.
But that wouldn't include the opinions of the peer review committee.
So I don't know if the judge can look and know what is a peer review versus what is not. So this ACGME and then SUMA's medical committee, the affidavit is clear as mud from where I sit, and that's how the trial court ruled, and that's how the Court of Appeals ruled. It's their burden to prove it. They did not prove it. I don't know if the trial court is able to look at those documents on its face as to whether or not they would include peer review unless they were specific to Calvin Stahl. And now if the judge says this is an evaluation of the care that you provided to Calvin Stahl, we will exclude this, and the plaintiff does not get it. I can appreciate that, and that's something that the trial court would be able to see on its face.
But But I don't get how you get that from the statute, that it only involves the plaintiff. That, I mean, all peer review documents are privileged. So why would it only be the treatment of him?
So a test. I'm sorry. So a test result. So Dr. Lashley did these simulations, allegedly, where he practiced doing intubations on not real patients. I would propose those do not fall under peer review, and that is something that we're entitled to.
But you do concede if there were peer review material in there from other patients, that would not be subject.
So we certainly do not want other patients' records. And Attorney Funk talks about these two groups of records. The one group is only medical records. We will all agree, Griffith versus Altman, when I was here roughly 8 years ago, you get the medical record, regardless of where it's stored. That's not in dispute. He's saying you don't get any other records as it relates to the resident, and we don't agree with that. If they were on notice, if they knew that he could not properly intubate, we think that we should be entitled to that information, and they still allowed him to do it in an emergent setting such as Mr. Stahl. As cited two times by SUMA in their brief, they discussed that the absence of a privilege would make participants reluctant to engage in honest criticism for fear of loss of referrals. SUMA argues that if discoverable, it affects the ability to comprehensively review and evaluate residents. But isn't that what every industry does? I ask that rhetorically. Why is the medical field different such that it cannot honestly review its residents without fear of discovery? Shouldn't there be transparency? Those factors. Shouldn't there be transparency, truth, and honesty? Justice Bruner, you raised the question about mid-level providers, nurse practitioners, PAs, their dangerous proposition of law that peer review extends to residency files. Does that also extend to nurse practitioners? Does it extend to PAs? And they said it could. And that is why it's so dangerous. Not only would we not be able to know what they knew about Dr. Lashley and his competence, but it would be extended very easily into all personnel files, all evaluations of anyone that works for a healthcare community. Not only NPs, not only PAs, but RNs, LPNs. Where does it stop? They establish this umbrella of peer review and say everything under it is protected and we're not entitled to discover the truth about what happened to the patient, what they knew or should have known about the care providers.
So with that in mind, I mean, understanding, and even in the affidavit, there's a recognition that a resident is a physician with a limited license to practice medicine, just like we could say with nurse practitioners and physician's assistants. Is there a different way, and with the understanding that the hospital by nature with a resident is in a different position than it is with a full-fledged physician, because this is a learning experience and part of an educational experience for a resident. So is there some other way that you could have asked for the documents other than the resident's file?
I'm glad you asked that. So, number one, with the physicians, the statute 2505.25 in the definitions specifically includes credentialing committee. That is one of the committees that is specifically called out. And that's why it applies to physicians. There is no such similar language for residents. Could we have asked for something else? I don't know what magic language to ask for or not. We just asked for the resident file. And you'll see in their affidavit, they use residency. That's not what we asked for. We just asked for the resident file. At a minimum, they could give us what they thought we were entitled to, the application, the HR records. But no, they asserted this giant overarching umbrella in terms of the peer review. This case in 1989, before 2305.25 was amended for the original record part of the statute, in Fostoria, it looked at what is a peer review committee, and it looked at, well, there is a peer review committee, and just if you conduct some peer review activities, it doesn't make you a peer review. The purpose is to conduct peer review activities. So if you look at that.
Why didn't you just ask for that? So twice now you've said, I've written it down, that you don't know what the magical words are to ask for something. But then you go on to give a laundry list of those things that you could have asked for. So why didn't you ask for the application or things that are normally in these files and say everything that is not part of peer review?
So generally, asking for files, it's very difficult to know everything that's there and not there. We know that some of the things should have existed that were in that file. It makes more sense in general.
To just ask for the whole file?
To just ask, yeah. But our understanding was when we asked for it, it was not peer review. There's nothing in the statute that makes it peer review. He testified to some of these results. When we asked him if he'd received any sort of negative criticism when it came to evaluations, his attorney objected and instructed him not to answer. So it's concerning when, and it's difficult to know specifically every single document to ask for and the right title of it, right? Is it a resident file? Is it a residency file? We also have a reference to a residency review file. We don't know the right language. We did know that there was a resident file and some of the documents that it contained. So we thought it was sufficient to ask for that document.
Well, why not have them designate a representative and take a deposition and figure out exactly how their documents are structured? I mean, that seems to be an easy way to solve that problem.
Based upon what I see in other cases, my best guess is they would object and say that we're not entitled to do that under peer review committee privilege. Unfortunately, the statute has been extended and extended and extended. And you see in this case, our motion to compel dealt with three things. One of them was an impromptu conversation between the resident and the attending right after it happened. We asked them what was discussed. They were instructed not to answer on the basis of peer review. Now, we won that argument in the trial court, and they didn't pursue that with the Court of Appeals. But it is being pushed and pushed and pushed, including where they won't give us an index or a privilege log in terms of what documents they're not producing, because they claim the whole thing is privileged.
So in the affidavit that's at issue, residency coordinators, in parentheses, the administrative staff, maintain the residency quality files. Did that mean anything to you in terms of peer review?
No, Your Honor. We discussed the affidavit not being clear. Paragraph 7 references the CCC committee one time and doesn't go back to it. They use residency file. They use residency review. They discuss at times, as was raised. It's not clear in terms of what documents they're claiming are contained and what committee, and who's in charge of being responsible for them. You point out that there's administrative people, and then later on, they reference the residency coordinators without any context. So with that, I see I'm out of time. I would ask that this court sustain the Court of Appeals ruling and find that peer review committee privilege be narrowly tailored and that the facts of this case, SUMA has not met its burden of proving peer review committee privilege. Thank you very much.
Thank you. Mr. Funk, you're over time, but I'll give you a minute.
Counsel, why can't you provide a privilege log?
Well, Your Honor, I think that goes to why in-camera review is not appropriate in this case, and that's because what the statute has said is in the 2003 amendment was that discovery cannot be obtained from the peer review committee's proceedings and records. And that was intended to create a bright line rule that says you can ask for specific records, but what you can't ask for is just, I want the peer review file. And so, for example, they mentioned HR records. Well, they could have asked for HR records, but they didn't. They asked for the peer review file.
But you're equating residency file with peer review.
And that's exactly what the affidavit is intended to show. The affidavit is intended to show that we established a peer review committee and that the residency file, which they asked for, was the residency file. The residency file is a file that is kept and maintained by a peer review committee. And then
why not just read that as they asked for residency file means all files you have on the residence. To the extent that you have ones maintained by a peer review committee, then they're not entitled to that. But every other file they've maintained, they've asked for. And that's,
because
that seems reasonable. They didn't say, give me your peer review file. They said, give me your residency file, which sounds like just all give me all your records on the resident.
Well, that's not what they said. They wanted the residency file. Now, residency file is a specific term of art. There are personnel files, right? Those are separate.
Well, but did they know that residency file was a specific term of art?
Yes, they did. They asked for it because they specifically knew that it's the residency file contains the performance evaluations.
So why can't you take out the peer review stuff?
What, I'm sorry, Your Honor.
Why can't you take out the peer review stuff, which they concede they're not entitled to?
Well, that's the whole point of the original source rule, is that the peer review entire file is protected. In other words, it cannot be obtained from the peer review committee's proceedings. Now, if you want to ask for specific records, like they said, we'd like to see the test results, well, then ask for the test results. But what you can't do is just say, I want the entire file. That creates a bright line rule that allows us to say, no, that entire file is subject to peer review,
but
because
then
it's
again,
a record of a peer review.
But then when you go to peer review, you can take everything with regard to the residency and then make it a peer review file.
Well, no, that's not the way it works, Your Honor, because there might be records that are within the hospital's operation. Just because it's been transferred to a peer review committee doesn't necessarily make it exempt. You can ask for those records, right? That's what the whole point of the original source rule was. You can ask for those records, but you can't just say, I want the peer review committee's records.
But as far as what objection do you have to a judge looking at these documents in camera?
Because
if a judge can do it for peer review documents, why can't a judge do it in this situation?
Because it undermines the fundamental rule that was established by the 2003 amendment. The 2003 amendment was intended to create a bright line rule to prevent the very thing that they're doing here, which is saying, I would like the entire residency file.
Except your folks are limited medical practitioners, so I don't know how bright this line really is. So why couldn't a judge look at it and make the judgment?
Your Honor, it says all individuals. The reason, it's not a question whether they could review the file, so whether or not it's legally required to review the file. The General Assembly in 2003
based on the evidence here and what's in this affidavit, this information is coming from a variety of sources. It's being maintained by a variety of people. So I don't think that really fits this traditional peer review that we've seen over the decades.
So over the decades, the courts that have looked at this have established two kinds of records, right? The second category of records is following that 2003 amendment that creates a bright line rule that says that you can't just go and ask for the peer review committee's records. Regardless of the source, the peer review committee's records are absolutely immune regardless of the source. Now, if you want to ask for the test results, you can make a request for that. Or if you want to ask for the HR records, you can make a request for that. But what you can't do, and what the General Assembly created this bright line rule is, and I urge the court not to undermine that bright line rule, is that you cannot obtain the peer review committee's proceedings and records. That is the plain language of the statute.
If we rule in your favor, will they have a chance to go ask for these other categories of records?
I'd assume so. If there are specific records, they said they took his deposition and identified certain records, they could ask for those.
So discovery is still ongoing? There's not?
I believe the discovery was stayed, but I don't know that it can close at discovery. So
counsel,
that's the whole point of it.
Let me change the subject a little bit.
Yeah, thank you for the indulgence.
Well, that's okay. The opponent says burden. Mentioned the word burden four times. Is it Summa's burden?
But
what's your burden?
Our burden is to establish two things: that we have a peer review committee. Even the Ninth District agreed we had a peer review committee. Then the second burden is this a record of the peer review committee? And that's what the affidavit is intended to
say. Okay, so I understand it. Do you believe your affidavit meets that burden?
Yes, it does, Your Honor.
Now I want to go back to the original source.
Okay. Issue.
So if there's test results, blood test, x-ray results, you know, somebody read an x-ray. If those documents are only in the resident file or the peer review file, are they discoverable?
Okay, so you'd have to look at each.
I'm using x-ray or blood test.
So there's
use either one.
Yeah, so there's two different tests here. So the first category document first category of peer review privilege documents would be a document that was created exclusively for a peer review committee.
I'm throwing that away. Yeah. I'm going back to the original source issue.
Right.
So it's a blood test.
Okay.
And somebody stuck it in the peer review file.
Right. See, Your Honor, that's not going to happen because individual patient records are going to be kept and pursuant to the case law are going to be, a patient always can have the right to obtain their medical records.
Okay, so let's take an X-ray. First X.
Exactly.
A radiologist, first one says, resident says, oh, it's osteoarthritis in the clavicle. Some senior doctor reads it and says, no, that's a broken clavicle. Okay? Those are just reading it. Are both those documents available outside the peer review file?
Yes, if it's relating to the individual patient, a patient always has the right to their own individual patient records. And so the point is that the committee then gathers all the records for peer review purposes so that the physicians that are on the peer review committee can review the entire portfolio about that resident. And so that's the reason why there's a protection for that, because that's the reason why that information is gathered. And they really revealed exactly why they want to review the peer review file. They said, we want to know what they knew about the competence of Dr. Alashi. That's the whole point, internal review of the competence, professional conduct, or quality of care of any individual who provides health care is entitled to protection. And that's the policy judgment that's been made by the General Assembly.
If there was a record that contained information about what took place right after this procedure, where the defendant made an admission to someone else and it went into this peer review residency file, you're saying that they wouldn't be entitled to that?
So the legal test would be first of all, if you're just saying I want the peer review committee file, that's going to be privileged. If you're asking for a specific document, like you're asking for some record that you've identified,
record that's in the residency file, the documents a conversation that took place right after the procedure, in which the defendant said something about what took place to someone else that was going to be assessed by the peer review committee, you're saying that they wouldn't be entitled to get that.
No, I'm not saying that. So the fact is, if you're just requesting the peer review file, which is what they did here, that would be absolute immune. If you're asking for a specific document, like you've identified that there's a record of a physician saying something, then you would have to examine that record to see whether it was prepared exclusively for peer review purposes. And then that would be the determining factor as to whether or not it would be protected under the first category of documents. But this is a bright line issue for us. They're asking for the peer review file. They even acknowledge that they can't do that if it's a licensed physician. So what they're trying to say is somehow residency review is different than licensed physician review, and it's not. In fact, it's more critically important that residency files are protected. And the General Assembly in 2003 made a bright line rule that you cannot just simply obtain the records of a peer review proceeding or peer review records, committee's records, in an effort to just circumvent the statute. And so all we're asking the court to do is just apply that bright line rule and say you cannot obtain the residency file because it's the record of a peer review committee. And that's essentially all the court has to do. And that's why there's no need for in-camera review, because the residency file is exempt, irrespective. It's not just the performance evaluations within the residency file. Certainly those are exempt, but everything in the residency file is exempt because it's a record of a peer review committee. If you want to ask for specific records, you can do that, but you cannot just ask for the peer review committee's own records. Thank you.
We'll take the matter under advisement, and you will receive a decision from the court.